Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Come together. I'm Glenn Moberg, and as the government shutdown drags on in its second week and the debt ceiling draws ever closer, the chances of both sides coming together seem slimmer and slimmer, at least to some. Republicans want changes in the Affordable Care Act, the president's signature health care achievement, or other legislative changes in exchange for paying the government's bills. The president says, and these are his words, he won't negotiate under threats of what he calls extortion and hostage-taking. Well, we have a very special program this morning. This is a rare opportunity for you to voice your concerns and ask questions of our two Wisconsin congressmen in North Central Wisconsin, 7th District Republican Sean Duffy and 3rd District Democrat Ron Kind. Mr. Kind will be joining us for the second half of the show. Sean Duffy is with us right now in his congressional office in Washington, D.C. Now, this is your show. I know a lot of you have questions and concerns about the shutdown, about the debt ceiling, and about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And I want to get to as many of your calls as possible. Our phone lines will fill up quickly this morning, and they are open right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Sean Duffy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Where do things stand right now with the shutdown and the Republican position in the House of Representatives?
Sure. So let me just maybe throw a little history out here, Glenn. We started off in the House. Many of us have been concerned about Obamacare. So we started off with a vote that would fund the government but defund Obamacare. And the president, and I didn't think he would take this, but he's not going to defund his signature legislation, though I'd like that. He said no. So we then said, okay, well, let's fund the government and let's give a one-year delay to Obamacare. And we thought he would take that, especially considering all the problems that we were hearing the president was going to have with the rollout, which we actually saw on October 1st. But the night before the shutdown happened, we said, okay, he won't take a defund, he won't take a delay. Let's fully fund the government and have him do two things. One, make sure that the president, that the vice president, Jay Carney, and the whole administration go into Obamacare. Members of Congress are going to be in Obamacare January 1st. Many Americans are going to be in Obamacare. We thought that if this health care reform bill is good enough for the American people in Congress, it should be good enough for the administration. That's the first thing we asked for. The second thing was, I don't know if you're aware of this, but many big business and lobbyists went to the White House and said, give businesses a delay in the penalty and taxes in Obamacare if we don't, you know, go into the health care coverage.
Right.
And the president agreed to a one-year delay. And what we said is, give individuals, give families the same delay for 1 year in regard to the taxes and penalties in Obamacare. The exchanges would still be up and kind of running. The subsidies would still be there. Obamacare would be functioning. It's just that if you have someone who goes, I don't want to go in to the exchange, they don't have to and they won't be taxed because they don't go in.
Well,
just like big businesses won't be taxed.
Right,
don't go in. So those are the two things we had asked for, Glenn.
Yeah.
And the president said no to them and said, let's shut it down.
Well, here's the argument against that. The individual mandate is the linchpin of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Now, without it, the entire law doesn't work. Everybody, especially healthy young people, have to be in those exchanges and be required to buy health insurance, or the insurance companies are going to go broke covering pre-existing conditions, as they're required to do. So Democrats are saying that's your real goal. You know, by delaying the individual mandate for a year, you'll effectively destroy the entire Affordable Care Act because Obamacare can't work without it. What's your response to that argument?
2 points. There's enough money to keep the exchanges up and running. It was pre-funded. Number two, it's pretty unfair to say, listen, the exchange, I can't even sign up on the website. And if I can't get into these exchanges, you're going to tax me for it? I mean, that's not fair. And if you're going to give that exemption to big businesses because of their lobby effort, it should go to individuals and families as well. You should treat them all equally under the law. And so, if you're not going to give it to the individuals, well, don't give it to the big businesses. But I think the greater point here, Glenn, is the president could have come back and said, "Hey, listen, I can't do that for you guys. This is one of the linchpins of my health care plan, which I don't think it is, but he could make that argument. But I, you know what, I am willing to go into my health care plan that bears my name. And I think everyone in my administration should join me in this health care plan. I'll go into Obamacare like you members of Congress and many Americans. He didn't counter-propose that. Well, he basically said, I won't negotiate. I'm not going to talk to you about how we resolve these issues. And so, Glenn, I'm the 10th of 11 kids. I'm a big family guy.
Uh-huh.
Families talk to each other to resolve problems. And the president and government are no different. You have to communicate with each other to find solutions.
We've got a Facebook comment from Rich Wenzel on this, and I'm just going to read it to you. In a recent email post, Congressman Duffy listed among his demands for a budget bill that, quote, the president and his administration should be included in Obamacare.
Yeah.
Isn't it true, he says, that anyone who already has coverage is not required to do anything? People who already have health insurance isn't required to do anything. So Rich says, why is this demand even relevant?
Well, two points. One, I already have health care coverage through the government, like other government employees. But the point was, if this law, this health care is so great, you members of Congress, you're pushing it through and are going to push it on the American people, you should be in it. And so members of Congress actually are in it as of January 1st. That's the same for the president. What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
All right, let's listen.
Everyone should be involved in Obamacare, and if this is so great, the president should be willing to give up, and the administration give up their gold-plated, platinum-plated health care plan and join members of Congress and the American people in Obamacare. They don't want to give up the gold-plated health care that they currently have.
That's not right.
Why is this good for the American people, Glenn, and not good for the administration? That's not the way even-keeled middle American people view the government. They think it should work for everybody equally.
Don't we historically treat presidents different than ordinary people? I mean, you can't fly on Air Force One. I can't fly on Air Force One. There are a number of perks that come with the job, and that's been all the way back to George Washington's administration. It seems it's only this president that's getting a lot of flack from the opposition and being told that he has to play by different rules.
No, so, okay, then you might say, well, Mr. President, you get special treatment. You don't have to be in Obamacare. But shouldn't we also, his whole administration, thousands of people work in the administration, just like thousands of people work for Congress. The thousands of people that work for him don't get to fly in Air Force One. Why can't they go into Obamacare? Why can't those who actually are aggressively working to pass this law, to implement the law, why aren't they subject to it? We believe that if you're going to pass laws that you think are great for the American people, don't exclude yourself from those great laws that you say America should have. Obamacare is one of them. The administration, if the president wants to tell the American people, I got Obamacare passed for all of you, but it's not good enough for me and Michelle and the girls, okay, let him make that argument. But then also say, why can't the other thousands of people that work in the administration join us in Obamacare too? That argument is unsustainable. The American people will cry foul. They'll probably cry something else.
Well, you know, the argument is that 85% of the American people, anybody who has an existing health care plan, is not affected by Obamacare. And the administration and the executive branch, like many government offices, like me, for instance, I work for the University of Wisconsin. I don't have to worry about Obamacare or worry about the exchanges because I've already got health insurance. But I need to move on, Sean.
But I can't let that point die. I'll make a quick counterpoint.
Let's do it quick. We got phone calls.
We're seeing people that have insurance, like you do, Glenn, being dumped into the exchanges. We're seeing premiums go up for middle-class families, for young individuals, people who can't afford to pay the increased premiums, they're going up. We're seeing people who are middle and lower-income earners going from full-time jobs to part-time jobs to get outside the grasp of Obamacare. Again, you can't have your government with gold-plated health care and ask the American people to take Obamacare.
So what's your answer? What's your answer for the 40 million Americans? What is your answer, Sean?
I am in Obamacare.
All right, all right.
My whole team is in Obamacare. The president, Jay Carney, they all need to join us.
Okay, very good.
Obamacare.
What's your answer to the 40 million people who don't have health insurance right now? What's your solution?
Well, I introduced a bill last year. We need to help cover those who have pre-existing conditions. I've agreed to that. I think that's a common sense approach. But in Wisconsin, we have 90 to 95% of Wisconsinites have insurance. And so instead of saying, let's work on the 5 to 10% who can't get insurance, what this bill does is it wipes out all of our current structure and imposes Obamacare on us. I would say let's focus on how do we get insurance for folks who can't buy it because it's really expensive. I did a town hall last night, and one of my callers said, listen, my insurance is $2,500 a month. I can't afford to pay it. This is going to be really good for me. Another caller said, I'm 22 years old, and said, my premiums are going to be $177 a month, and I'm in school, and they've gone up. I can't afford this. I had another caller say, I live in Thorpe. The only plan that I can now access in Obamacare, there's one of them, and it's going to be in Wausau. So I can't drive that far to Wausau. I had another business owner on the call last night, Glenn, say, listen, he said, I don't know. I'm going to be in Obamacare, and my employees are. And he said, I don't have the information. I don't know what's going to happen on January 1st and after. Can you help me? There's a lot of there's some good things that happen, but there's also consequences too, Glenn. And we have to think through the benefits and the consequences of this law. And it's not all benefit.
All right, very good. I want to play just a 30-second clip of what the president said the day before yesterday and have you respond to it. Here's President Obama.
My suggestion to the speaker has been and will continue to be, let's stop the excuses. Let's take a vote in the House. Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work. There are enough reasonable Republicans and Democrats in the House who are willing to vote yes on a budget that the Senate has already passed. That vote could take place today. We can't make extortion routine as part of our democracy. Democracy doesn't function this way. And this is not just for me, it's also for my successors in office. Whatever party they're from, they shouldn't have to pay a ransom either for Congress doing its basic job.
So the president is accusing you of extortion and hostage taking. He says he won't negotiate because to do so would set a terrible precedent, not just for him, but for all future presidents. And he says, whenever a minority in the government don't get their way on a piece of legislation through the democratic process, the president says they will try to shut down the government and threaten to destroy the American economy unless that ransom is paid and unless he hangs tough and refuses to negotiate. He says he's doing it for the democratic process, for the Constitution, and the future of the country. What's your response to that?
So first of all, he says extortion. I think this is more accountability. And I want to be clear, Glenn, I want to get this government open and running. I want to find compromise and agreement to get the government running. I do. I don't think a government is good for anybody. But did you was that the whole clip that you played there, Glenn?
Well,
because what he said is
I want
Republicans to take a vote on a clean CR. I would agree to that if the clean funding mechanism failed. And he said, if they vote on the clean funding mechanism, the clean funding bill, and if it fails, then I'll come to the table and negotiate. He's not saying he's going to negotiate ever. Listen, Glenn, and your listeners know this. They follow politics probably more than most. That there's disagreement in Washington, that people aren't on the same page, is not unprecedented. We understand that people have different political points of view. What is unprecedented, though, is that we have a president that won't negotiate. That won't come to the table that says, listen, he's called the speaker, you've reported it, I won't negotiate.
Well, he's saying...
I won't negotiate.
Let me quote the National Journal here. They ask, have Republicans forgotten that they too must abide by the Constitution? And they quote the 14th Amendment. They say it's explicit in its instructions to America's federally elected officials. The validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. So they're saying the entire debt limit is unconstitutional. So my question is, do you take your oath of office seriously? Doesn't the Constitution and the 14th Amendment require you and other congressmen and the president, for that matter, to pay all the government's bills, all of them, not just the ones you like?
Listen, I want to pay all the government's bills. And
then why don't you pass the clean CR to fund the entire government?
The president says this is unprecedented. You know that the Budget Control Act, also sequester, came from negotiations over the debt limit. The debt limit and its negotiations have taken place for years. This is not new that we negotiate on the debt limit. The president, in I think it was 2006, actually said this debt is going to mortgage our children's future. He said it was unpatriotic.
Right.
And he was going to vote against it because he understood that Congress has the duty to raise the debt. And so, Glenn, I want to raise the debt. limit. But I also want to make sure we're reforming the way that our government works and spends its money. Your listeners know that we have a $17 trillion debt, that we borrow sometimes more than a trillion a year. This year is going to be a little less than a trillion a year. But I serve on the Budget Committee and the Congressional Budget Office. They look at these numbers, and we see in the next 2 years this deficit absolutely skyrocketing because of the form of our spending and our entitlement system. So we have to get our hands around it. And what there's no better time to do that than to say, if you're going to extend the limit on the credit card, we should also talk about reforming the way we spend on the credit card. And that's the conversation that we want to have. And if the president says, I'm not going to negotiate.
Well, he says he'll negotiate.
That is historic in precedent because presidents always negotiate.
But isn't he saying he'll negotiate, but you got to open the government first, and
what
then we can talk with whatever
is,
you want?
Listen, if you've ever sold a house, it's like saying, deed me your house, and we'll negotiate the price later.
All right.
I mean, what I would say is, just listen, go into Obamacare. Treat families the same way as big businesses. Let's open this thing up, and we can negotiate the details later.
All right. I'm going to ask one question about polls, and then I want to get to as many calls as I can. According to the latest polls, Republicans seem to be bearing the brunt of this shutdown. Just 28% of Americans have a favorable impression of the Republican Party. That's lower than it's ever been for a political party, according to Gallup. Democrats now lead the generic congressional ballot, 46% to 41%. Independents are blaming Republicans for the shutdown. The Associated Press found that just 5% of the public approves of the job being done by Congress. And they broke it down according to congressional districts. And according to one poll, if an election was held in the 7th congressional district, your district right now, you would lose that election to a generic Democrat because of the shutdown. Now, are you worried about these polls, how it's affecting the brand of the Republican Party, and are you worried that it could affect your reelection chances?
Well, first of all, that was the poll that you referenced about me was done by MoveOn.org.
That's true.
And it was done
by
the group PPP, which is notorious for skewing polls and poll numbers. So,
but you know what? They got the presidential election right.
Well, in this number, they have me losing Republicans and winning independents. So if that's where I'm at, we looked at those numbers and they're skewed. But what I'm here to do is do what's right. And I think when you talk to the American people, and on my call last night, there's a lot of Democrats and a lot of liberals, and I talk to a lot of them as they call into my office. When I talk about what we've asked for in regard to the last proposal we made to the president, most of them go, that's very reasonable. I haven't heard that. Most people aren't hearing this on the news because they keep saying Republicans want to do away with Obamacare. They want to kill Obamacare. Well, many Republicans don't like Obamacare. But the government is shut down right now because the president says, I won't go into Obamacare, nor will anyone in my administration. I won't match members of Congress and the rest of America in this health care bill. And it's closed down because he's not going to treat the American families like he's going to treat big businesses and the exemptions they got to the taxes because they stormed the Hill with their lobbyists, and they stormed actually the White House with their lobbyists.
All right.
Everyone understands that's not fair, Glenn.
Very, very
and
good.
And we're talking about
Sean,
something that's reasonable and fair, and even Democrats, they understand, and liberals go, we all want fairness under the law. We all want equality under the law. And if you're going to pass bills for America, you should be subject to those laws and those bills. That's all we've asked for. But even I want to be clear too, Glenn. I know you're going to take questions. I want to open up the government. If the president doesn't like this proposal, I would say, I'm okay, Mr. President. Tell me what you want. How do we negotiate this? What would work for you? How do we find something where everyone's a winner? We get the government open because a closure doesn't work for anybody.
All right, very good. Let me go to Ned in Wausau. Ned, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy. Please keep your comments brief.
Okay. Thank you, Sean Duffy, for being on the air today, and it's an honor to talk with you today. I'd just like to state that on the front page of the Sunday New York Times, October 6th, there's an article named A Crisis Months in the Making. What essentially happened is for several months, we've got David Koch and Attorney General Edmund Meese joined with the Heritage Foundation, Heritage Action, to join with many Tea Party Republicans in forming a group that, yes, they don't want to shut down the government. I don't accuse anyone of doing that. But what they said was essentially the risk was worth it. The government, partial government shutdown, and the looming debt ceiling crisis that will affect all of us in the country are worth the risk of shutting down and causing economic chaos.
All right.
If they can't get their way on Obamacare, which is unrelated to government.
Ned, we got it. Let's let Sean respond. According to the New York Times, this has been planned for months. You Republicans have been planning it for months. Your response?
Well listen, Ned, first of all, I don't answer to any of those guys. I answer to the people in my district, my constituents, and that's why I've been so reasonable, saying, all right, no defund and no delay. Now this really reasonable proposal. I've done everything I can to try to reach across the aisle and get this thing open. And just I want to be clear for your listeners too, Glenn. When Ted Cruz was out there talking about how this is such a great strategy, defund Obamacare, I was on MSNBC and other stations saying, that's stupid. It's like saying if the Democrats took control in Wisconsin of the Assembly and the Senate and they passed a bill to repeal Act 10 and send it to Scott Walker, that's all the reforms that he did. Does anyone in the right mind think Scott Walker would agree with Democrats to repeal Act 10? No. Obama's not going to agree to defund Obamacare. So I was calling out guys like Ted Cruz as well, saying this is not the right strategy. This is stupid to think the president's going to repeal his own health care bill.
Let's go to
so
Jim.
I've been an equal guy out there trying to go, what's the right thing to do for the American people and for my district and for Wisconsin?
Let's go to Jim and Merrill on that very point. Jim, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy. Please keep your comments brief.
Thank you. Mr. Duffy, I get that Obamacare, the health care issue as a whole is very complex. There's issues with it. I get that. But here's my problem. Yeah. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is law. It was passed. Why are we rehashing this old fight? If you don't like a law, that doesn't mean you can't abide by it or follow by it. If I screw up and speed and I get a speeding ticket, I can't say, well, I didn't like that law, so I'm not going to pay for it. You guys got to do your job. Pay the bills that you got to get paid. Then, if there's issues with the health care, you come back to that when it's part of the implementation process, part of the procedures. You tweak it, you fix it. I get that there's issues with it, but do your job. You guys aren't getting the job done. Come on, get with it here.
All right, Jim, thanks for your comments. Sean Duffy?
But that's a great point. I want to reiterate this again, and I know it might be hard for people to understand this because they haven't heard this in the news. We haven't repealed it. The government's not shut down because we're replacing it or we're delaying it. We've asked that the president go into Obamacare. Is that common sense? Is that affecting the law that has passed? No. And even the president has already moved on his bill numerous times, giving an exemption to the taxes for big businesses. We say give the same to the individuals. And just one last point to Jim. Every Congress isn't bound by prior Congresses. We change laws and rules all the time in Congress. The government's not shut down because Republicans said you have to defund it, Mr. President. The government's not shut down because we said you have to delay it for a year. The government shut down because the president says I won't put my administration in Obamacare. Michelle and I aren't going into Obamacare. Jay Carney's not going into Obamacare. It's shut down for that, and that the president's not going to treat our families in Wisconsin the same way he's going to treat big businesses with giving them an exemption for the taxes and penalties under Obamacare. And to be very clear, in our proposal, Obamacare is still up and running, kind of. It's still, the subsidies are still there. So if you're sick and you're going, I want to go into the exchanges, it's really good for me.
Sean,
it's still open and working, Glenn. They can get in there and still function as Obamacare.
Sean, you've made the point a couple of times already. Let me get one more question in because our time is limited. Deb and Rothschild, you've got the last question for Sean Duffy.
Yes, hello, Sean. I am one of your constituents, and I really feel that what the Republicans are doing is they're so afraid that this will be popular like the Social Security and like Medicare, and so they're doing everything that they can to stop this, and I want it, and I have insurance. I want it for everybody else out there. I have an economic background, and I know it will work.
All right.
It's just going to be too popular for you, and you don't like it.
All right, Deb. Thanks for the phone call, Sean.
Deb, that's not true. I'm fighting to get this government back open, but I know you say you like it and you want to go into it. I wish the president had the same heart that you have, and he would go, I too am going to go in it. I'm going to lead the charge with members of Congress. I wasn't there when they passed it, but Congress passed this. I signed it. And you know what, American people, just like Deb, we're all going into it. We're all going to be treated equally and fairly. I'm not going to keep my gold-plated health care. I'm going to go into Obamacare with you, Deb. That's what I wish you would do, because I'm going in with my family on January 1st. And we're going to see how it goes.
Sean Duffy, we've got to run. Just a quick response, 15 seconds. Do you think that we're going to go over the edge with the default?
No, listen, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to fight my heart out to make sure there is no default. We need to pay our bills. I'm very hopeful, Glenn, a little foreshadowing. I think we can get some kind of an agreement. It might happen in the next couple of days. By Friday, Saturday, we're going to hopefully see some movement where we can have a short-term extension of at least the debt limit so we can sit down and talk and work out these differences.
Right.
That's the way our government works. Glenn, thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you for being on, Sean. It's always a pleasure, and I love the fact that you don't mind being challenged, and let's do this again soon.
Absolutely, and no doubt you always challenge me, Glenn. Thank you for that.
Sean Duffy, 7th District Republican Congressman, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to a Democrat, Ron Kind, 3rd District Democrat, will be on with us in just a few minutes. Rhonda in Eau Claire says, don't blame the Republican. She's online too. Rhonda, hang on. You're the first phone call in the next segment. 1-800-780-9742 if you want to talk to Ron Kind on the government shutdown on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Shut it off, buddy, now I shut you down. Shut it off, buddy, now I shut you down. Shut it off, buddy, now I shut you down.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganchert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support for WPR comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, welcoming the return of birds and art. See 125 all-new birds and artworks now through November 10th, along with 5 exhibitions from the museum's collection. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you just joined us, we've got a very special program. We're hearing from our two regional congressmen, one Republican and one Democrat, on the government shutdown and the looming debt ceiling crisis. We just heard from Republican Sean Duffy of the 7th Congressional District. With us right now from his Washington office is Ron Kind, a Democrat from the 3rd Congressional District. And we're going to try to get as many phone calls as we can. We had a couple of people drop off during the break, so you can get in right now if you want to voice your comments and concerns about the government shutdown. 1-800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. And I suspect the lines are going to fill up quickly. So if you want to call, you need to do it right now. 1-800-780-9742. Ron Kind, thanks so much for being with us today. Jacob on Facebook asks this question. Should we expect government shutdowns and threats to default on our payments to become the norm?
Glenn, good morning. And I hope the answer to that is no. But right now we have a broken government, and it needs to be fixed and quickly, because the Congress should be working with the American people to get this economy functioning again with good-paying jobs rather than acting as a detriment, or in this case, imposing self-inflicted wounds that's hurting the economic growth that we need. Because the final analysis, it's the job growth and economic growth that's going to solve a lot of problems that we're facing right now. And instead, Congress is acting more as a hindrance to that rather than as a partner to it. And I hope the best we can do around here, I hope it's not the best we can do, is just these six-week extensions, whether it's our responsibility to pay our bills as a nation or getting the government functioning again. But apparently the news today is that Republican leadership is considering only a six-month extension.
Six-week extension. Now, when we talked to you last week, you'd reached what you thought was a bipartisan solution, reaching out to Republicans like Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania for a deal that would reopen the government in exchange for eliminating the tax on medical devices. How's that going?
Well, we're going to be meeting again later today. We had meetings this week. The most recent one was last night again, and it's a growing group of well over 40 Republicans and Democrats who are sitting down and listening and talking to one another. And there's growing agreement that we need to get this government functioning again. We need to open up the doors. given the damage that's being done. We also need to pay our bills, as any great nation is expected to. And we also need to put in place a budget mechanism for a long-term deficit reduction agreement to get our fiscal house in order. And that is what we've been coalescing around and trying to put down in legislative form. So we're going to be meeting again later this afternoon, actually, to see how many are still interested in moving forward on that basis in light of the last-minute breaking news that we have about this six-week extension of the borrowing costs.
Let's listen to comments. This is just a 30-second clip made 2 days ago by House Speaker John Boehner, and I'd like you to respond to it.
We asked that they sit down and have a conversation with us about funding the government, keeping it open, and providing fairness to the American people under Obamacare. They refused to do it. I didn't come here to shut down the government. I certainly didn't come here to default on our debt. But when it comes to the debt limit, again, over the last 40 years, 27 times the debt limit has been used to carry significant policy changes that would, in fact, reduce spending and put us on a saner fiscal path. What the president said today was, if there's unconditional surrender by Republicans, he'll sit down and talk to us. That's not the way our government works.
So, according to John Boehner, the president is refusing to negotiate. He's demanding unconditional surrender from Republicans. Is that any way, Ron Kind, to reach a compromise, and is that any way to govern?
Well, first of all, it's a very disingenuous comment coming from the Speaker of the House. The Speaker knows fully well that the House and the Senate each passed their budget resolutions in April. The Democratic leadership has called 19 times to go to conference to resolve those differences in the two budgets. Over the last 6 months here, and the Republican leadership are the ones who have refused to go to conference and negotiate over any of these budget matters. No one group, Glenn, no faction of the Congress or the American people has the right to shut down the government and default on our financial obligations in order to extract concessions from the other side. That is not how business is supposed to be conducted around here. That's not how democracy is supposed to function. And it's not just about the Republicans doing it, but if this is the precedent, if this is how business is going to be conducted, then it will be some future Democratic majority holding up a Republican president with similar type of demands. I mean, if this was the acceptable practice, there would have been many Democrats calling to shut down the government, calling for not paying our obligations until troops were withdrawn from Iraq or until those tax breaks for the most wealthy were repealed. But that's not how things are supposed to function around here. And that's what the president's trying to protect in this process, is that this doesn't become the normal way of doing business.
All right, let me argue from the other tack then. The president says this is extortion. He won't negotiate with a gun to his head. It would set a terrible example for future presidents. That's essentially what you just said. So why are you trying to set that terrible example by reaching out to Republicans over the medical device tax?
Well, let me tell you, the device tax wouldn't be linked to opening up the government. It would be done on a separate measure. But, Glenn, this is something that's had bipartisan support in the past. 79 senators have already supported to repeal the device tax because it's bad policy. I'm trying to get people to pay for that, though, so we're not adding to the deficit. And now many of my Republicans are agreeing to find a pay for it to replace that lost revenue so it doesn't increase the deficit. And there's bipartisan support in the House for doing it as well. So, and I don't have a problem for us to continue to work on things we agree on and fix things that don't make sense. But to make that linked to opening up the government or keeping things shut down, I think is just a very bad precedent to move forward on, because it's gonna happen the next time and the time after that. And I'll guarantee you the American people are not gonna want that type of uncertainty and dysfunction in their life every 6 months or every time a budget happens to be coming up in Congress.
Let's go to Rhonda in Eau Claire, who's been waiting patiently. Rhonda, you're on Route 51 with Democrat Ron Kind.
Well, maybe not too patiently. I'm running out of patience here. But I just wanted to make the comment that I am so tired of hearing words like extortion and ransom and terms like holding people hostage and arsonists when it comes to talking about the Republicans and the shutdown. And the fact is that way at the very beginning when this whole thing started, when Scott Brown was elected to be senator and when there was going to be that final vote to not pass the Affordable Care Act, there was a dirty, or I say, some kind of maneuver that was done that nullified his vote. Honestly, what did you think was going to happen?
Well, I really don't know what she's referring to. The Affordable Care Act passed with a majority of the votes in the House of Representatives. It passed with a majority of votes in the United States Senate. It was signed by the President of the United States, and it was upheld by the United States Supreme Court, and it's the law of the land.
Well, it would have
taken... And now to shut down the government and to refuse to pay our financial obligations until that law is repealed goes against any process of democracy that we've ever had. In Washington these days.
Well, Ron,
we can continue to fight these fights and have these old debates, and that's fine, but
no,
let's
not
hold up the entire government for the sake of that.
Like that, what do you think is going to happen? You know, my husband and I, he's a disabled vet. We are not in a very good financial situation, but it is something that we are willing to do to buckle down and limit how we're spending. Because it is something that I think is worth standing our ground for. And so I just love the way you sugarcoat it when the Democrats do a maneuver that went against the will of the people, and now we are seeing the results of that maneuver. So if anybody is to blame, if anybody is holding anybody hostage, that was the beginning.
Well, I don't understand this idea that we're going against the will of the people. Again, majorities in the House and the Senate passed this legislation. We had an election last year where the Affordable Care Act was front and center for the American people to decide, and the president won with a majority of the votes. Democrats picked up seats in the House. We picked up seats in the Senate. In fact, there were more votes for Democratic members of the United States Congress cast last year during the elections, and there were Republicans. But because of redistricting, the Republicans were able to hold on to their majority. So I don't know where this argument that we're going against democracy fits into the facts with these elections.
Rhonda, thanks so much for the phone call. I think what Rhonda was referring to was the fact that it would have taken a supermajority of 60 votes in the Senate, and when Scott Brown won that seat, the Democrats only had 59, but they managed to uphold the law anyway.
Well, you uphold the law, you pass a law with the majority of the votes. You know, filibustering every bill that comes up was not the standard practice or the norm, nor is it in the United States Constitution. It's an anachronistic rule that was somehow included in the Senate. It's not a part of the Constitution. It can be repealed any time that they want to, but unfortunately it's become common practice to demand supermajority votes just to sneeze these days in the United States Senate, let alone passing any type of legislation. And that's been unprecedented, too, throughout the history of our republic and this democracy.
1-800-780-9742. If you want to talk to Democrat Ron Kind about the government shutdown, we had Republican Sean Duffy on for the first half of the show. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Ian in Wausau. Ian, you're on Route 51 with Ron Kind. Well, apparently we've lost Ian, but he has a question about the... About the discharge petition. As I understand it, a number of Democrats, led by Representative Chris Van Hollen and George Miller and Nita Lowey, have sent letters to 30 House Republicans who have indicated their support for a clean continuing resolution, asking them to back a discharge petition to get legislation to the floor. House Democrats announced on Friday that they would try to use this procedural motion to put the legislation up for a vote, whether or not John Boehner introduces it. What do you think about that? That was Ian's question, and do you think it has a chance?
Well, obviously, you'll have every Democrat supporting that discharge petition just to allow a clean vote up and down on getting the government open again. I would anticipate it would be very difficult for my Republican colleagues to sign that, because by doing that, you are virtually ceding control of the House proceedings to the minority party. And it's unprecedented. You really do expect the majority party members to do something like that. But many of them have, Glenn, come out and said they would support a clean budget resolution if it's off, as well as a clean increase on our financial debt obligations. But it's going to be up to the Republican leadership to offer them that opportunity. So we'll just see where this ultimately goes, and whether there will be an opportunity for that type of that type of vote.
Republicans are passing these piecemeal clean resolutions, these piecemeal CRs one at a time. They're saying, you know, we shouldn't be funding the whole government with just one bill. Let's do it one department at a time. And they're blaming Harry Reid in the Senate for not taking up those CRs. What's wrong with that?
Well, again, no party has the right to shut down the entire government and then decide just what program, what provision, what line item they're going to support and neglect everything else. I'm getting that's not how democracy is supposed to function. This is what you're supposed to do during the course of the year. Pass appropriation bills, authorization bills, decide what is worthy of support and what isn't, having those debates and votes. That's the normal legislative process. But to shut down the government and then decide on your own, a minority faction again within Congress, what is going to be worthy of support and what won't be funded, is a lousy way to run a country and to run this government of ours. And it's not fair to the democratic process to be, again, you know, she may not have liked the term, but holding hostage until all of your demands are met. That, I think, is just establishes another bad precedent to move forward on.
1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Ron Kind, let's go to Josh in Wisconsin Rapids. Josh, you're on Route 51.
Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
I just want to commend you for the wonderful work you're doing. I'm unabashedly a supporter of the work that you're doing. You got my vote in the last election. I'm glad that we got redistricting, and I got to vote for you instead of Sean. And I think that you're going to get my vote again in 2014. But I hope that you will continue with the work that you're doing, and that somehow the level heads in the House of Representatives will prevail and get Speaker Boehner to have an up or down vote on the bill that's been given from the Senate. And I guess so. If I have a question, what do you think it will take for Speaker Boehner to allow that vote to happen, or is he just going to go down with the ship?
All right, Josh, thanks so much for the phone call. Ron Kind?
Well, Josh, is exactly why I've tried initiating these bipartisan discussions in the House, because it really is going to be up to the Republican leadership to decide what comes up for a vote. But the members have a say in this, too, especially members in his own party. And that's why we're reaching out to them, talking to them, finding out where they are and how we can break this impasse that's paralyzed Washington right now. And we found now, for the last week and a half through these conversations, there is some common ground. I mean, there's support on their side of doing a clean budget resolution to get things functioning again. There's support not to hold this bill hostage here as far as paying our financial obligations, not defaulting for the first time in our nation's history and becoming a deadbeat nation, losing the full faith and credit of the United States, which would result in interest rates skyrocketing, increasing borrowing costs for our government, which would drive up the deficit, something that no one around here wants to see done, and as importantly, driving up borrowing costs for businesses and families throughout America. That would be a huge economic break on the type of economic growth and job creation that we need right now.
David Stockman and a number of conservative economists are saying the debt ceiling is no big deal. He says the president can prioritize and pay our creditors, and even pay Social Security and Medicare without defaulting, if we go past the debt ceiling deadline. And there are a lot of parts of government, he says, that we simply don't need. Aren't you and other Democrats worried that the American people are going to find out, Ron Kind, that they can live without the federal government?
I think there are three problems with that argument, Glenn. One is we've never done this before. Why are we willing to play with fire and risk the full faith and credit of the United States and risk another economic calamity after coming out of this great recession that we're trying to recover from already? This is unprecedented. We've never defaulted. Why would you even take that risk when most of the other economists are saying this is bad news? It's going to result in bad things. Why take that gamble? But secondly, and this is my understanding of the technical capability of issuing payments, we don't have the technical means of separating this payment from the next payment. Literally, there's $60 billion worth of payment that the federal government makes every single day. And to expect, you know, to go back with that software and the databases and being able to differentiate what payments are going to be made and which aren't going to be made, it's a technological impossibility. We don't have that capability. And then finally, if I'm a bond investor and I start seeing the federal government defaulting on certain obligations somewhere else, I'm thinking to myself, when are they going to do it to me? and it's going to create so much uncertainty in the bond market, and people are going to stop refusing to purchase Treasury notes and bonds. Or if they do, they're going to demand a much higher premium price given the risk that they're facing, and that's going to drive up the cost for everyone as well. And I think at a minimum, that would be the result of this whole prioritization scheme that's being concocted that, well, the debt ceiling really doesn't matter. You can make these payments, but not that payment. And I also submit it wouldn't be long before payments are withheld from Social Security recipients, because those are some of the largest payments that go out the door every day. And if you start prioritizing and you don't get a certain revenue flow coming through the door in a certain day, Social Security recipients will be the ones that will be hit. And why do you want to take that risk with it? So I think this is a very dangerous argument that's being made right now, and I don't think we want to test that theory.
All right. Jim left us a Facebook comment referring to something Congressman Duffy said in the first half of the show. He says, Congress isn't bound. This Congress isn't bound by previous Congresses. So does that mean that Congress can do whatever it wants to, regardless of the laws that are already on the books? So this Congress isn't bound by previous Congress. If they don't like a law, they don't have to fund it.
Well, you go through the normal legislative process in order to change laws in this country. And the normal way is you have committees, you have debates and votes on the floor. It has to pass the House, has to pass the Senate. The president's going to have to sign it or veto it, and then you have to override that. That is the normal legislative process around here. What isn't normal is shutting down the government, defaulting on our financial obligations until you get your way.
All right, got it. Let's go to Margaret in Arkdale, who has a question about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Margaret.
Yes, I'm very upset about that. They constantly call it Obamacare. It's the Affordable Health Care. And that really upsets me. I personally think that they're just trying to get President Obama. For some reason, I guess they're sore losers. Also, my husband and I watch, a lot of the news, keep us up. I'm 72. My husband is 80. We live on Social Security. He has a small pension, but not that much. And it scares the heck out of us when they start talking that we're not going to get our Social Security checks, they're going to cut back on Medicare. It's very frightening for people in our situation.
All right, Margaret, thanks so much. Ron, kind of your response.
Yeah, I appreciate what Margaret is saying. This dysfunction coming out of Washington is creating that type of angst and uncertainty and concern throughout America. We're seeing consumer confidence plummet right now. It's at 2009 levels, at the peak of the financial crisis. That's where consumer confidence is because of the shutdown and the possibility of default. And this is all unforced. This is all self-inflicted. We don't have to be doing this to ourselves right now when it comes to supporting the economic growth and and trying to increase business and consumer confidence. But here's something a little bit ironic. I've found with polling time and again that when you call it the Affordable Care Act and you explain what's in it, vast majority of the American people, including a majority of Republicans, support it. They like the policies. But if you call it Obamacare, then the numbers flip.
The websites for these federal exchanges have been crashing. They've been subject to incredible delays. USA Today calls it inexcusable. Doesn't this prove that Obamacare isn't ready for prime time and needs to be delayed a year, as the Republicans are saying?
Well, what it does prove is it's consistent with any other major program that went forward on this basis. The same thing happened to Social Security sign-up. Same thing happened to Medicare sign-up. Same thing happened to the Part D prescription drug. And sometimes you got to work through these technical glitches on the computer sites. One thing that probably should have been anticipated but wasn't was the overwhelming interest in going to the sites. Four times as many people were trying to access the sites last week when they first became available than what was anticipated or projected. And maybe with hindsight, you should have anticipated that huge demand. And a lot of people now are getting through, and we're hearing a lot of stories of reduced premiums, the affordability of coverage, people with pre-existing conditions getting the health care that they need in their lives. But I don't think anyone should be all that surprised that within the first week or two of a massive database that was created, that there's going to be some glitches and some delays. People have until the end of March to sign up. They got six months here in order to make a choice. So I don't think you can judge or condemn a program based on the first week or two when it was unveiled. Oh. I know people are working around the clock.
Ron Kind, we're down to our last 30 seconds. We've got a call from Darlene in Tomahawk, and because of our time, I'm not going to be able to take the call. But her point is, since 2008, Republicans have been fighting President Obama. Is all of this personal? Is it all directed against him?
I hope not. I think there are honest differences of opinion on policy and what direction to go with the country. And that's natural. That's healthy for democracy. Let's have those discussions and debates and votes and that. But what is alarming is the complete breakdown and dysfunction of the political process right now.
Ron Kind, we got to leave it at that. Thanks so much for
Glenn.
Being with us.
Yep.
We want to thank today's guests, 3rd District Democratic Congressman Ron Kind and 7th District Republican Congressman Sean Duffy. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and the Talking Heads. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and a reminder that Route 51 is now rebroadcast every Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.